This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hello and welcome. It is a new season of Long Shots here on the VSiN Podcast Network. I am Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin, Wes Reynolds joining me each and every week. This golf season, fellas, it's glad to be back. I know you guys held down the fort for me last week, woke up, and didn't actually feel all that bad, but my voice just did not work. I could not talk. I did it like this or whatever. It was weird. I know there's been a lot of stuff going around, so glad we got one episode out the door. But here we go, kicking things off here with the Sony Open. And Wes, this is, you know, looking back on last week, I know you do the great article over at VSiN.com. And by the way, if you have not already, $9.99 is an introductory offer. So you can go in and you can check out all of the awesome stuff that we do over there at VSiN.com. But this tournament, you do a great course preview, unlike last week. Yes, they're both in Hawaii, but that's pretty much where the similarities stop.
Yeah, this is a different course. This is a par 70, very short course at Wailea, just a little bit over 7,000 yards. Fairway's still wide, but not the, you know, the Grand Canyon type with fairways that we had at Kapalua. And then the greens are Bermuda, but a lot less contours in these greens, a lot less undulation. So these are very flat and pure green. So guys, and this will be part of my handicap when we get to the selections, just because a guy putted bad last week doesn't mean he's going to putt bad this week. These are very different greens, very different type of course. Accuracy a little bit more important here, certainly, than last week with those wide fairways. And you had rough that really couldn't get you in trouble. This rough is a little bit trickier Bermuda rough, especially like when you get around the greens. So that's what you got to be careful of. You're going to be in the rough, I think, at some points here. So not the easiest scrambling. You get some flyers out of that thick grass, but greens are pretty big too. 7,100 square feet, eighth largest on the PGA Tour. It is a flatter course, and it's also not really by a lot of water either, like Kapalua was. It's more in the city. This is, of course, in Honolulu on the Isle of Oahu. So it's more of a in like the real city center type of course environment this week.
Yeah, Kelly, let's go overall kind of big picture stuff here as we kick off yet another golf season, another golf betting season. What is your overall betting strategy as we start off? Because for me, I am much closer to the vest and then start to widen up and put more stuff in the portfolio as we get more data, as I see more stuff with my eyes and all of that. That's not everyone's strategy. Some people come out of the gate firing just as hard, but that's I kind of slowly ease in a little bit over the course of the season. I'm just a data guy. I like to have at least a little bit of something to go off of.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can speak for mainly everybody on this podcast, but yeah, you know, people attack handicapping golf differently. All three of us are pretty data driven and, you know, recent form driven, and we really go off of our statistical modeling and stuff like that. So, you know, for me personally, yeah, these first few events of the year, it's a little, you know, it's dialing back the number of bets, dialing back the amount. That's going to crank up here in a couple months. I think that stuff should kind of rise as you get into the spring and into the summer, and that's really when you're in the heart of the season and can really be firing away. I think it's a good time, especially when you're talking about last week, this week, where these are really birdie fest courses too, where you can pick a few outrights. I would caution events playing against too many, playing into too many finishing position markets, too many matchups, just because of the wild swings that can occur, from round to round in tournaments like this. So yeah, it's definitely coming in a little bit softer with bets, I would say. And, I think one other thing to keep in mind, that where we might talk about that same, you know, I think the same kind of philosophy in looking at stats, when we're looking at stats, you're going back further to really get more of a longer data set for what we're actually looking at now. We might have talked about that in the fall as well, because there's just not as many tournaments that are being played. I think the other one, though, that now that we hit the Hawaii tournaments, is there are, like, be more willing to look further down the board. Like, this is the time of the year that we talk about often in other sports, where it's, you know, the odds makers know about as much as you do with these guys. They don't know how, you know, what they've been doing vacation wise, how much golf they've been playing, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, except for us, you know, a few guys that have maybe been pretty active over these past few months. So, I think it's a good time to look at some longer shots as well, where some pricing might be a little off compared to what your numbers have.
Yeah, how about Chris Kirk last week? Mm-hmm. 200-1 on the opener. I think this was the week a lot of people were going to target Chris Kirk because he played so well here in the past, but 200-1 gets it done, first of the year.
Yeah, perfect example, and that's, you know, Chris Kirk, we all know the type of player he is. Like that, I'm not saying that was a unfair price, you know, of 200-1, but hey, you know, Chris Kirk, he won last year, you know, we get to another win already this year. Like those, that's a long number that you could have had on a guy that you could have made a case to back, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Wes, is there anything as you kind of got done with, as you wound down last season and you were heading into other sports and stuff, and you were reflecting over the golf season, is there anything that you made a note of that you're going to try to do differently this year? Is there anything that you are going to maybe emphasize more or try to get away from in your golf betting?
Yeah. In terms of like maybe round by round stuff, I want to, you know, like last week, the final round didn't go well for me, but, you know, want to maybe use a little bit more of the matchup stuff, and you can use either head to head or you could do three ball. Is another way to do it because usually the three ball is the three guys that are paired in a group and then they price it three ways and who's going to win. And you could bet no tie or you can bet the tie and get a push and get your money back based on the price. But that's certainly something I'm looking at a little bit. And then also, you know, because this is a content thing too, you know, so if, like, you feel like you got to get everything in early, you could still look in the market and add some things. So maybe not add as much on Tuesday, but take another look Wednesday and then be able to put it out there for our viewers, listeners, and customers and whatnot. So because you always feel like you're in such a rush to get all this in, and it's like, I don't want to have to make a decision where it's like, okay, yeah, I still want to consider this guy, but maybe I don't want to play him right away.
Yeah, yeah. Kelly, for me, kind of the same deal is you know, I think, and this is just a guess, but as we continue to add more states and as we continue to get more people interested in stuff outside of just the NFL, when it comes to sports betting, I think these, to Wes's point, I think these markets are going to be a little more fluid. I think these markets are going to see the numbers shift like one way or the other pretty rapidly. And, you know, it's not always, the number isn't going to always go against you, right? Like that is one thing that I have kind of noticed, where it feels like a lot of times we're trying to get in NFL bets early, we're trying to beat numbers, we're trying to do it because you're afraid this is definitely going to move against me. Well, yeah, you know, there's a lot of times in golf, man, you fire up something on a Wednesday afternoon, a Wednesday evening, and you've gained 2, 3, 4, 5 points of value from where you were looking at it on Tuesday. So that's something I'm going to do as well, kind of with Wes. Like, I will always tell people, here's what I have in the account. I reserve the right on these guys should a number, you know, pop up that I like to kind of pounce on those guys.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something that I do often because I think it hurts my brain to run into this, but it is, you know, like Wes is saying, we do content. We love doing this podcast for everybody out there. And it is, you know, openers Monday, Tuesday, we're making a lot of our bets. It definitely pains me sometimes when I pull up the same, you know, the same app late Wednesday night and I see the same guy that I bet, you know, at let's say 60-1 instead of 50-1 that I bet. So I think there's some of that I need to probably do more, where it's, you know, maybe if I'm betting early in the week, leave a little wiggle room to add on that bigger number before the tournament. I think for me, the bigger one would be looking more outrights once we get in tournament too. I think the round by round matchups, Wes, like, I think that's something I'm comfortable with the way I'm handling that. I think the big change for me from over the past few years was 2 years ago, it was a lot of agonizing second place, third place finishes for me, but still was able to get some outrights home and ended up being a pretty positive season. Last season, I dialed back the pre-tournament outrights a fair amount, especially as the season went on. I was looking to attack just finishing position markets stronger and stuff like that. And from that side of it, the season went well. The problem was on the outrights, I still had plenty of seconds and thirds,
yeah,
and
right.
not as many winners getting home. So I think that's one for me where I don't want to say it's a small sample size because it was an entire season, but at the same time, I don't want to try to fix something that I think was that I'm not sure was broken yet, as far as the way that I was attacking pre-tournament outright. So it's something that is definitely on my radar to monitor this year, though. That's for sure.
Yeah, Wes, if people are finding us for the first time here, this is something you're going to hear us say over and over and over again. I just want to start off the first podcast with all three of us of the season with, you're going to hear us talk a lot about head-to-heads. You're going to hear us talk a lot about finishing markets and position markets, things like that. These are how you keep your bankroll healthy in golf betting. If you are sitting here only I'm not going to say it's wrong. Listen, if you're betting a small amount of money and you just and all you're trying to do is have fun sweating a tournament to hit a lottery ticket, that's fine. That is a strategy for betting, and that's you're doing it front. If you're actually trying to grind out a profit over the course of a season with golf, if you're only playing outrights, unless you get lucky, you're going to come up.
Right.
You're going to come up in the red. And so, like, just know you're going to hear us talk a lot about, yeah, I like this matchup, this three ball, this this top 20, this top 30, this top 10, this top five, whatever it might be. And the reason we're doing that is so that we're just not completely bleeding each and every week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, placement markets ended up covering my outrights where based on that, I had a profit. Now, I wish I would have done better in the round by round matchups, which I didn't end up doing. But yeah, placement markets a lot of time. Look, I had four outright bets last week. None of them got there. But, you know, when you add, okay, Morikawa top 10, Schauffele top 10, JT Poston top 20, Sahith Theegala top 20, and those add up and those cover your placement markets where you still have a winning tournament, even though you don't have anybody really in contention to win the thing. I know Morikawa was top five, but it was a backdoor top five. He was not like right there with Kirk and Theegala and Spieth and company to win the thing.
So yeah, if you're listening to this, Kelly, I think just to drive it home, if people are listening to this for the first time, the very biggest piece of advice we could possibly give is do not go crazy on the outright bets and try to keep your bankroll at a decent place by making sure that you're taking advantage of these markets in which you are going to cash more often than hitting an outright. By the way, a reminder, one person wins a golf tournament.
Yeah.
One person wins. And so it is way, way easier to get a top 10 or a top 20 or a top five or win the head-to-head or whatever it might be, or even some of these other wacky markets that we don't necessarily have the access to, but you guys do, rest of country and the nationality markets and all the different things that are able to be played out there. So just be sure that you use the whole menu and don't just hit that that fat number on these guys for the outright.
Yeah, I think just to summarize it real quick, it's really cool to hit a 40-1. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot cooler to finish your golf season up money.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do really in the long run. So no matter how we go about it, no matter what markets you bet into, that should always be the thinking.
Wes, 38 of the 144 players played last week that are going to be teeing it up here in this one. We have seen some of these guys that played the week prior have some success, despite the fact that the courses are completely different and the style of play probably is completely different. My guess, and I'd like to hear your opinion on this, is just, hey, some of these dudes live in Florida. A trip to Hawaii is a pretty big jaunt over there and all that. Like, you're over there, you kind of get adjusted to being in Hawaii. Maybe you got your Mai Tai days out of the way, whatever it might be, you know, like you take it a little bit more seriously. But we have at least seen some of these dudes that played the week prior have some success here at the Sony.
Yeah, it's 8 of the last 11, and then going back a little further, 17 of the last 25 winners of the Sony played at the Century, formerly known as the Tournament of Champions, the week before. So it knocks off a little bit of rust, I think, even though they are dissimilar courses in many ways. Kapalua, kind of a challenging walk. This is going to be like a literal walk in the park for these guys, this flat course at only 7,000 yards with very little undulation, very little elevation changes. So, I think you do have a little bit of an advantage. Doesn't mean you necessarily have to. Of course, Siwoo Kim, who won here last year, did not play and was not eligible for the Century. And then Cam Smith in 2020 also didn't play the event. But more often than not, you want to knock off a little bit of that rust in an early event.
Yeah, I think it's also one of those. It's also one of those golf trends that I don't think we get as many of these as we do maybe in other sports like the NFL, NBA. But it's also one of those. Yeah, I feel like we say this every year with this tournament. But it's okay. Yeah, you have that carryover, but that was always the tournament of champions, right? This is that field is always some of the best players in the world,
right?
And then you get those guys that are hanging around for the second tournament in Hawaii. So I think there's a reason a little bit more behind that trend playing out.
And by the way, this is a relatively predictive tournament too, based on I think Data Golf rated this second behind Augusta National. Because if you look at the form sheet, like sometimes you get really erratic form sheets with these guys. And then a lot of times, same guys finish in top 10 or top 20. So you get guys that have good runs here. So this has been pretty predictive. So there are a lot of guys that target this tournament because they have success here.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing we'll talk about a lot, we do a lot of modeling here on this, use various sites to get that done. Guys, I have moved off of one of the sites that I used in the past. I'm going to focus a whole lot more on just this stuff, the information that I get from just the general information model stuff that I get from Data Golf, the stuff over at Rick Rungood. And then I have used the BetSpurt stuff as well to give credit where credit's due. These guys are putting in a lot of hard work and putting in really good, put in really good charts and models and things that we can try to get information from. And so I don't want to sit here and say like, I'm doing this all myself. That would be a lie. I'm definitely working on the hard work of other people. I am not a data scientist. I do not know how to make a model. So I just take the information, put it into some of these things that these guys have made to where it's easy for me to get some work done. I used to use Fantasy National in the past. I might do it again this year, but a lot of the data to me was a little bit incomplete. It didn't have a lot of the stuff from around the world, which obviously a lot more and more of these guys are starting to play, in these tournaments and stuff. And so I felt like there was a blind spot in my golf handicapping. So I'm going to see what happens moving away from that this season, at least at the beginning of the season. If my results if my results are bad, then maybe I'll pop it back open and go in and do some stuff there. But again, all credit where credit's due. Kelly, I don't know what you plan on using this year and all of that, but I just want to let everybody know when they hear us talk about like, oh, in my model, this blah, blah, blah. It's like, I didn't make the model. Like that's not me. I'm not a data scientist.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I think we, all of us for the most part kind of use the same sites and the great, like you said, great work that those guys do. And it is, it's definitely a combination of kind of everything, right? I love pulling up, the different models at different sites. You talk Fantasy National, you talk Rick Rungood. Some of those guys have even their own, their own stats that they've come up with. And I think that are great to kind of build out different stuff on different sites and then kind of see where you have some crossover with some guys. I think it's a great thing to do.
No, and that was a good point also that Matt brought up, because you are getting guys now that are playing, bi-coastal isn't the right word, but multiple tours. Look, a lot of these guys on the DP World Tour, I think it was the top 10 at the end of the year that weren't otherwise eligible, like the Adrian Meronks and the Rasmus Højgaards. Like, they're going to play DP World Tour events and PGA Tour events, and you just don't get that shot link data from the DP World Tour. They have like general stats and stuff, but in terms of how these sites like put them in the modeled statistics, very hard to get like complete information. So you got to do a little bit more legwork now.
Definitely a lot more digging with all of that. So let's get into the modeling stuff, guys. So each and every week, we will let you know what we plugged in, what we found important, and how we came up with the numbers and the different guys that we ended up with on our card. Now, you can take this information and you can go to any of these sites if you want to. Disclaimer, they are pay sites. You are going to have to pay and get a subscription and things like that. But you can go and you can make your own model. So you can kind of take a blend of what I did and what Kelly did and what Wes did, or you can go in and say, like, you guys are all idiots and do something different. But there is, we're going to at least give you an idea of kind of how that all went down. So Kelly, kick us off here. What was the what was important to you this week, and what kind of fell super heavy in your modeling?
Yeah, will do. Strokes gained off the tee, good drives gained. I think you can look at fairways gained there as well. Those are the two that I kind of looked at off the tee wise. Not hugely important, but definitely you've seen some more success from these guys. Having clean drives in the fairway here in tournament past. You're going to hear a lot about this being a second shot golf course. We're going to say that a lot this year, but a lot of it, just even reading past player quotes, is attack. I think in their minds was, I think it was Kevin Kisner, we saw a quote from of just the, even when looking at the fairway, really important to hit it in a certain position, either left side, right side of the fairway, to set up that second shot. So not to say off the tee isn't important here, because I think it is. But it's mainly trying to keep it clean, trying to keep it out of that rough. I believe they replaced a lot of that rough this year too. So you're going to get that Bermuda rough that, you know, we talk about sometimes being a little bit unpredictable, yeah, how it comes out of it. And, you know, I think you've heard from different players in the past that feel with this course, I think you've heard both sides, some of it not impacting it as much, some of it getting a little bit of those bumpy flyers out of the Bermuda rough. So did that off the tee, stroke gain approach. Very important here. Obviously, we talked about that second shot. Proximity buckets. I did 125 through 200 yards. Good note from Ron Close here. Over 68% of all approach shots hitting from that range in this tournament. Used opportunities game. We're talking about this going to be a birdie fest. You're going to see this probably, you know, near minus 20, minus 21, something like that, you know, score wise. So opportunities gained, birdies are better gained. Two that I looked at, a lot of par fours. We only got two par fives here. So par fours looked at as well. And then putting on Bermuda. This is definitely one of the events that I will look at that more with than I usually do with some of the tournaments that we'll talk about. Spoiler alert, though, I don't know that I really followed my putting models too well for this event. So that was pretty much everything this week. I know this isn't the easiest around the green track, but I think this is where I probably differ a little bit from you guys, but whenever we're talking birdie fest, it's just not even something I even really care to look at, because I think if you're playing too many holes around the green, you're stuck there. You're going to be struggling to make up strokes on the field. So not even something I really popped in this week.
Wes, what about you?
I did approach. The proximity I did was 150 to 175, 175 to 200. Siwoo Kim, who won this event last year, led the field in strokes gained approach. So, second shot golf course. It's not as maybe pronounced as some of the other courses we're going to get to throughout the year, where it's like it's all approach. In terms of off the tee, a combo of fairways gained and good drives gained, because, you know, 70, I think 46, I think, is the official yardage. So not a very long course. Now, there will be guys that will try to cut some of the dog legs with driver, but you get a lot of guys clubbing down here. So I think when Justin Thomas said he won here a few years ago, he's taking like 2 iron off the tee almost every darn time. Yeah. So, you know, so you don't have to, I think, you know, you don't want to incorporate, I think, too much distance here. A general one, and I usually weigh these very small, strokes gained par four, obviously, at a par 70. You only got 2 par 5, so you got 12 par fours. Most of them are anywhere from 400 to about 480 to 500 yards. So I just did general strokes gain par four, birdie or better gain like Kelly did, strokes gain Bermuda, did a little bit around the green because this is gnarly Bermuda rough and it could be tough to scramble here. And then I did a little course history. Now, when you do this, you got to do this small, because keep in mind, there's a lot of guys that maybe have a ton of rounds here. And then there's a lot of guys that have maybe 10 rounds here or 8 rounds here. So you got to keep that in context. So when I did like YLI course history, of course, the guys that are frequent players here, the Matt Kuchers, the Chris Kirks and Stewie Sink, Corey Connors, Russell Henley, those are the guys that appeared on that list. And they played here a lot more frequently. And it just so happens, of course, the leaderboard, which we'll get to in a minute, top 3 guys on the odds board have never played this event this week.
Yeah, super, super crazy. That's one of the things for me that was just a little wild when I was trying to figure things out this week and how I was going to go about it. Yeah, I'm pretty much along the same lines as you guys as far as what I threw into the model this week. I think the only thing that was a little bit different for me, I did try to differentiate because it seemed as if what I was getting from a bunch of the market out there was a lot of people weren't putting very much into off the tee stuff and weren't putting very much into any of that type. It was just more the accuracy deal. So I did a little bit of total driving to add a little bit of that distance in there just to see if that would tinker with the model just a little bit more. So I did throw that in there. And then, like I said, just a little bit more off of the tee stuff that I think than most people were putting in their model this week, but pretty much along the same lines as you guys, the whole good drive percentage, fairways gains, et cetera, stuff like that.
One follow up, just to, just a one thing that Wes said, I think like a perfect example of that with the course history stuff. And it is, you got to be careful, but you get, take a guy like Justin Rose. He hasn't played this event since 2017. So if you're going to look at recent, recent stuff, he hasn't done much, but he's played this event a bunch and he's done really well here. It's just been a while since he's played the thing. So I think that that's a good example. There's a lot of those kind of examples where you might see with that stuff this week.
Yeah. So let's go ahead. Look at that odds board real quick before we start getting to our picks. And as Wes mentioned, I mean, Wes, we were talking about Ludwig here on this podcast last season, and we kind of saw this up and coming kid and we thought that it was good. Would you have thought in a couple of months we would be looking at a full field event where he was not only the favorite, but the favorite by a couple of points? Right. I mean, like, it's just, it's wild. And I know there's a lot of hype around him. There's a lot of hype around him last week. There's a lot of hype around this kid, and rightfully so. He's absolutely fantastic. But, man, it's almost getting to the point now where the hype has made him unbettable, even though I want to bet him.
Yeah, like he was a total fade, I think, last week because all the matchups he was getting faded against. I had a couple against him last week, but the guy still shot 10 under 63 in the final round on Sunday. He finished well down the leaderboard, but yeah, you know, now he's against taller company now. Now he's matched up in these tournaments against Schauffele and Cantlay, of course, who are not in the field this week, but Max Holm, like those are different caliber of players. Now, but this guy clearly has the talent. Look, has his card on both tours, won the season finale. Probably should have won Rookie of the Year because he did win, but I think this might have been tallied before that, so it went to Eric Cole, and he had a very good year. But Ludwig did win both on the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour, also a big part of that European Ryder Cup team. So, yeah, the secret's out on this guy.
Yeah, Wes, I wanted to ask you, because that was a strategy I know you were undertaking last week. I ended up tailing you on. It helped kind of save some of my tournament last week in those matchups against Ludwig. Is that something you're going to be looking at again this week?
Perhaps in the matchup. I'm not. Obviously, I did not bet him on an outright. I'm not going to bet him also in any, I don't think, in any placement markets. I don't know if it's as pronounced this week because now he's matched up. He's matched up, I think, with Tyrrell Hatton and Matt Fitzpatrick, and not as big of a move on those players as there certainly were with Xander and Cantlay and Max Homa and, you know, top 10 guys in the world, which Hatton and Fitzpatrick aren't far behind, but not as big of a fade this week, I think, in a full field event.
Yeah, Kelly, I last week, I think, is a good time to fade somebody like that, specifically because last week it equalized all of the players, right? Because if you were 25 yards shorter than a guy, and he was, or there could be guys that were 50 yards longer, the way that sometimes the greens would just roll you down, it didn't matter. Some would roll out, some would roll back. It was just equalizing so much of everything that's going on, where skill sets, I think, this week will prevail a little bit more than they did last week with all that. Tyrrell Hatton, Matt Fitzpatrick, Russell Henley, Brian Harman, Corey Connors, Eric Cole, Chris Kirk, JT Poston are all of your top of the leaderboard guys. They are all under 30-1. We get to the 30-1 range. Asai Thegala, Benny On, Siwoo Kim, Justin Rose, Harris English, Denny McCarthy. And then we get into the 40-1 range. It still has some familiar names in Cam Davis, Brennan Todd, Adam Svensson, Hideki all the way down to 45. Will Zalatoris has crept to 50, as has Lucas Glover. Keegan, I can't even. Kelly, should we just go ahead and say now, just like Keegan on your card every week? Is that what, like, are we doing that this year or what?
Not on my card.
All right. So we're not doing Keegan every week this year. Okay. No, all right. No. All right, it was a running joke with Kelly last year. He had Keegan on his card, I would guess, about 78% of the time last year in some way, shape, or form.
I'd say that's high, but yes, I like Keegan, and yes, when I go over my card, you're going to see some other familiar Kelly favorites on it.
Andrew Putnam, Adam Hadwin, Steven Yeager, Matt Kuchar, and then everybody else in this tournament, 60 or longer. I actually do have a couple of those 60 or longers on my card as well. We will get to all of that when we come back, as well as going around the world with Wes Reynolds after these brief messages. We are back here on Long Shots VSiN Podcast Network. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin, Wes Reynolds. And Wes, let's kick things off here with Wes Reynolds around the world.
Yes, and we go over to the Middle East, as we usually do on the DP World Tour. This year, not in Abu Dhabi, though. The Abu Dhabi Championship moves into a two-playoff event at the end of the season. They're changing a little bit of the format on the DP World Tour, but they are going to open in Dubai. Now, the usual Dubai event that you know early in the year is the Dubai Desert Classic. That's next week. This week, it is a newly created Dubai Invitational. Only 60 players in this event. This is going to be a pro-am for the first 3 days, you know, very much like Pebble Beach and also the Alfred Dunhill Links that they have in Scotland in the fall. But the amateurs will be done on Saturday, and it'll be all pros on Sunday. So they are starting in Dubai. This course is called the Dubai Creek Golf and Yacht Club for this inaugural event. Of course, whenever you have an event in Dubai, the guy that's always the favorite is the guy that has the most wins in that city, and that's Rory McIlroy, who's got 5 wins in Dubai at various events, plus 275. He's the favorite. Tommy Fleetwood, second choice, who actually lives in Dubai and has a golf academy there, but he played in Hawaii last week, so a lot of travel for Fleetwood, plus 750. Nikolai Højgaard, who cashed for us at the end of the DP World Tour season, winning the DP World Title Championship at Jeremiah Golf Estates. He is 11-1. Brother Rasmus also in this field. Adrian Maronk, Ryan Fox. So a lot of the usual DP World Tour guys, and some of these guys are going to be playing more on the PGA Tour this year too, because they finish in the top 10 on those Race to Dubai standings, so they get their card. In terms of the course, just to break it down real quick, par 71, a little less than 7,100 yards. Same designer as the guy that designed the Emirates Golf Course, which is going to host the DDC next week. So, you know, fairway's pretty narrow, a lot of palm trees, kind of a tropical coastal type of vibe in the middle of Dubai. So this hasn't hosted a really big tour event since the late 90s. And I didn't do a ton with this because, look, Rory can run away and hide. He's was opened at 3-1. So if he won this, I wouldn't be shocked. But I decided to take him on with a couple guys. One that I did mention, Rasmus Højgaard, 18-1. Remember, he was the original Højgaard twin that won on the DP World Tour. It's like, this guy is going to be a star. And then all of a sudden, it's like his twin brother Nikolai is like Serena Williams and him to Rasmus's Venus, I guess. Maybe not. They're only 22 years old, so time will tell.
Time,
but
yeah,
Rasmus has 4 DP World Tour wins. Nikolai has 3. Nikolai, though, was on the Ryder Cup team. He's just outside the top 50 in the world golf rankings. Also won that DP World Tour Championship to close out 2023. So Rasmus maybe could strike back in the sibling rivalry here. Dan Bradbury, another guy I liked in the middle range, 45-1. Only 1 victory on the DP World Tour. That was in South Africa at the Joburg Open in 2022. 5 top 10s, 7 top 20s last year. 3 top 6s in his last 7 starts to close 2023, so he certainly finished the season well. And then Audrey Arnaas, 125-1. Now, he's been the subject of some rumors. Of course, one of the big stories in the golf season when we were away, Jon Rahm, now a member of LIV Golf, and likely to have an all-Spaniard team. That's certainly the rumor that Audrey Arnaas would be part of that. Audrey Arnaas, another guy that is based now in Dubai. He is going to play the first 2 events this week and next week at the DDC in his adopted hometown. I think he's probably pretty important. I don't know if he eventually joins Rahm's team. He's certainly subject for rumors. It would be logic that he would. 13th last year at the Dubai Desert Classic, 9th in the DP World Tour Championship back in 2022. So I think this is important. This is your adopted hometown. You want to win here. So I thought he was worth the shot at 125-1, but with only 60 players, that's as deep as I went.
Matt, the next time you take the old yacht out, I highly recommend storing it at the Dubai Creek Golf and Yacht Club. That's one of my personal favorites, at least.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, that's
yeah. We got a 5-week desert swing, by the way, in Dubai. I think they have Abu Dhabi, Ras Al Khaimah, also Qatar. So 5-week Middle East swing starts the DP World Tour.
I guess not a bad spot to be based out of then, if you're you are going to be playing.
I know. A lot of people didn't know Tommy Fleetwood actually lives most of the year in Dubai because he built that little golf academy at Jeremiah Golf Estates. So yeah, he's based out of there despite the fact he's playing in the States most of the year.
Wow,
man, frequent flyer miles, hopefully, you know.
Yes.
You learn something every week with Wes Reynolds. That's what that's if you're new to the pod, that's a big takeaway. You learn something new every freaking week.
You'll learn something. You'll learn more knowledge that won't mean anything to you in the long run for me.
Hey, listen, that's it's or me and Kelly too and everything like that. It's perfectly okay. All right, Kelly. Let's get this thing going here. What did the model say? What did you like? What did you hate? And what did you end up putting in the card?
Yeah, I would say one that I like, I feel pretty strongly about, Russell Henley. Great summer for him. We saw him play great all throughout the summer. He's played a little bit recently, so does have some form. Was at the Century last week, T13, the RSM, November. One of the ones the model likes the best this week. And he does have some good tournament history here. T32, second place, T11 is his last three finishes here. So did play an outright at him on him, 22-1. I think you can, 20-1. I think any of those numbers are fine with him. After that, I dropped down big. This is all outrights for me this week. Adam Svensson, 50-1. I bet on him. I think anything around that number, though, is fair on Svensson this week. This is another guy, played last week, wasn't all that great. T33 at the Century, T5 at the RSM, T45 at the WWT, T41 the Zozo. Not great results this fall. T18 at the Shriners, but at least was playing. So do have a little bit, a guy playing, at least coming in here that we know for sure hasn't been sitting, just sitting around vacationing all fall and all winter long. Did surprisingly just rated out pretty high in some of the models that I was looking at. And another guy that does have some decent results here past couple years, T41, T7. So something to draw off from there. Then I go to 75-1 with Aaron Rye. I would like to call him at least a Kelly specialist, at least a part-time Kelly specialist. Matt, I know you played him a lot last year as well. Let's see. This was a guy, Wes, we were talking about as you and I were doing pods throughout the fall, just playing a lot of different events worldwide. So he's really been active, T10 at the Nedbank, T9 Cutter Masters, T21 at the Zozo, T28 at Shriners. So not only playing, but actually putting up pretty good results here as well. Has played a couple times here, not great, but at least drawing off some experience. He knows what he's walking into. So played a long number on him, 75-1. And then one of my guys, when I saw triple digits on him, this is really just more of a numbers play. Shop around. I think this is, we saw this a lot last week, Wes, too. I think some of these numbers, especially outright numbers, I was finding more variance in, last week and this week than, man, I can remember in a long time just looking at a single golf tournament. So I saw 100-1 on Emiliano Grillo. That was one I wanted to jump on. I think for a guy who has a win, in the past calendar year, that kind of number in this type of field was really just more of a number play. But I think anything down to 75, 80-1 on him is a fair bet, number to bet into. And then this is a Wes Reynolds tip of the cap. I don't know if you went with him, but I know you've brought his name up before, at least. Matty Schmidt, a guy that was popping out to me as one of the DP World Tour guys that put up good results. Another guy that's been playing well the past couple months. T4, Alfred Dunhill Links. You were talking about that one. I know a lot, Wes. T17, South African Open. Third at Bermuda. Second at the Andalusian Masters. So another guy that's been active here. Bomb price on him. He's never played here before. That was a big one this week. 180-1. There's 150-1s out there. You're well into the triple digits with him. Took a bit of a flyer on him. And that's my whole card. Right now it's just five outrights. Don't really plan to add any finishing positions. Maybe with Henley, I will play a top 10 or top 20. And then I still have some matchups to check out, but I don't expect to have much going on there.
Wes, what ended up on your card this week, my friend?
Yeah, and a couple that Kelly had were just near misses. Maybe could be ads in play. But first selection, Chalky Connors, Corey Connors this week, 28-1. Look, very good form here. Third, 12th, 11th, and 12th. In his last four events here in Honolulu, averages a score of just a little bit over 67 across his last 20 rounds here at Wailea. So Lost over five strokes gain putting at Kapalua this week, but I think these greens are flatter, easier to putt on, so I'm not going to hold that much against him. Top 10 in the field and approach, and was actually second best in Sunday's final round behind Justin Rose, who I did also consider adding this week. Justin Rose, by the way, tied the Kapalua course record with 61. You know, how about having a three-ball matchup with Ludwig Aubert, who shoots 63, and it's like, you're going to win that, and he's matched up, of course, with Justin Rose, who shoots 61. So there is that. Another guy played kind of shorter, 33-1, the post. Man, JT Post in T5 last week, despite the fact he really didn't gain much with the irons, but not amazing form here, but somewhat consistent, but a lot of correlations. And one place I found some correlations here, despite the fact it's in a totally different area of the country, is at Sedgefield at the Wyndham. A lot of guys that have won there have also won here, been successful here. Russell Henley, Siwoo Kim, Kevin Na, Brant Snedeker. So maybe Poston, former winner at the Wyndham, can add to that. One that Kelly has that I have as well, Adam Svensson, 50-1, was seventh here in 2022, is actually the first round leader here in 2019, shot a 61. Nice finish at the RSM at the end of the season, and that's, by the way, where he got his Lone Tour win. Just consistent cut maker, consistently in the top 25. Svensson, 50-1. Lucas Glover, 60-1, another player that did struggle on the greens last week, lost seven strokes over four rounds. That was second to last in last week's field. So, of course, we bet him with those numbers. Led the tournament, though, on strokes gained approach, number one, and he's best in approach over the last 50 rounds in this field. Missed a cut here last year, but I think he's a different player now, considering he was fifth, by the way, here in 2022. But this guy won the Wyndham and the FedEx St. Jude and you know, had a career year in his, I think he's like 42 or 43 right now, years of age. So Lucas Glover, 60-1, I thought was fair. You mentioned him earlier. I'm going to play him, even though Kelly's not. Keegan Bradley.
There we go.
Another player that struggled bad on the greens. He was fourth worst last week in the field and putting, but seventh on approach. Not great form here, but has finished top 12 here twice in the last 4 years. All of his wins in terms of a player profile, all of his wins are on these like shortish par 70s. If you look at his career mark on the PGA Tour, he's got six PGA Tour wins. So Keegan Bradley, 60-1. Then the two bombs I played, Tom Hoge, 120-1. Okay putting last week, but really kind of struggled with the around the green and some of those short pitches. I think maybe he'll go better here. He was fourth on approach in last week's field, third here in this event at the Sony in 2018. So Tom Hoge, 120-1. And then the really speculative play that I don't expect is going to do well, maybe use him in placement markets if you don't want outrights, Maverick McNealy at 275-1. Woo! And follow along here. He missed 5 months, by the way, missed about half the season last year with a shoulder injury, then came back for the last two events, didn't really do much, made one of the two cuts in Mexico and made the cut actually at the RSM. So not a lot of form coming in, but he was seventh here last year. He's a very good putter historically, especially on Bermuda. He also did get married back in December. So is this a little nappy factor play? I don't know. Certainly worth some placement market bets. And, you know, just kind of judging, following him on the gram, as the kids say, he's been doing a lot of practicing and, you know, maybe taking this game seriously. Because the thing about McNealy, everybody knows, people that follow this game know his background. You know, dad is Scott McNealy, who funded Sun Microsystems. So McNealy was a rich kid. I mean, so it's like, how much does he really take this game seriously? But I think he is, you know, now that he's married and obviously still looking for that first win. So Mav McNealy, 275-1.
So for me, early on in the season, I'm pretty like, I stick pretty close to the vest when it comes to the model and just like, let the numbers speak for themselves, and then I'll start doing a little bit more subjective stuff as I get more data with just my eyeballs as well, and just from watching and different things like that. So, you know, listen, I couldn't argue with it. It's not sexy. It is what it is. I have a 22-1 on Russell Henley. You can still find 22s out there if you want Russell Henley. He was inside the top five in every version of the model that I ran. And even when I tried to kind of put things in there to bump him out, it still didn't work. And so when that's the case, I just got to put the ticket in there on him. So 22-1 on Russell Henley. That number is still available out there. I too played Corey Connors, West, same deal. Every version of everything. If I take super long sample size of 100 rounds, if I take 50, if I take 36, if I take 24, Connor still shows up inside the top 12 in just about every single one of those. And so at that price, and you know, we always like these courses. If we think that it rewards accuracy off the tee and you don't really have to have all the length and stuff, Corey Connors, obviously with his approach game and doesn't have to be the longest guy, can certainly get that done. And then after that, again, I don't know what the model sees here. You know, guys, it just went longer guys after this. I mean, I have Akshay Bhatia in mind, 66-1. He was really, really high in the recency stuff, obviously. But then even when I take it back to 50 rounds, 75 rounds, 100 rounds, just trying to kind of say like, okay, who has this skill set maybe for the long term? He was still showing up all over the place. And I know last week, kind of up and down in that tournament last week. But like we said, it neutralizes skill sets last week with all of that. And I think maybe some of his stuff could really shine through here at this one. So I thought the number was a little bit too long. JJ Spawn, another name that ended up all over
him.
All over, like for me, 75-1 on JJ Spawn. Just again, another dude inside the top eight in three of the versions, inside the top 15 in several. And that at 75-1, that number just doesn't add up to where he's shown up in the model. And then Wes, I had to do some digging, man. I had to go, what is this model telling me about Ben Coles? And so I had to go in and start doing some research and see that Ben Coles is a dude that had a tremendous Korn Ferry Tour season last year. And capped off his tremendous Korn Ferry Tour season last year with a fifth place at the RSM Classic to close things out over at Sea Island. And so he is technically, I guess, a rookie this year on the PGA Tour, but
second time, I believe, back on the tour, though.
Another one of these kind of Eric Cole type deals where it's a guy in his 30s, but has just kind of like really found his game of late. And if you guys look, and now, granted, a lot of this stuff is being pulled from Korn Ferry, but if you look at his recent stats and recent stuff, like if we're talking par four scoring, which all of us said that we thought was very important to us and stuff that we really, really liked, Ben Coles is second in this field in par four scoring average. He's eighth in birdie or better percentage on par fours and things. And so, again, a lot of that's Korn Ferry stuff, but he was able to translate that onto the PGA Tour at the very end of last season, had an outright fifth finish. And with that, I'm just going to ride the super long number, 100-1 on Ben Coles. You can still find that 100-1 out there on him as well. If you go and look around, 90s is as well available on Ben Coles. So those are my outright plays this week. I did play top 20s on all of those, most of those guys. For the longer shot guys, 20s on Bhatia, Spawn, Coles. I played 10s on Henley and Connor. Added in a top 20 on JT Poston, your boy there, Wes. I think Poston was popping all over the place for me. And then Ryan Moore was weirdly up in a lot of the stuff for me as well.
He played well down the stretch last year because he had to scramble to kind of keep his card and keep that status because he had that major medical extension that was right in the mix there in Bermuda and just couldn't get it done against Camilo Villegas.
And it's a super long top 20 number on him. It's pretty sexy. It's like 5.5-1 just for a top 20 on Ryan Moore. So not an outright ticket on him, but I do have a top 20 on him. Another guy that was just really, really showing up. And as you said, if you look at the long-term stuff, he's not going to be there. But if you look at the shorter-term stuff, like you said, Wes really kind of closed it out last year good. And we'll see if it carries over. Who knows? It's early on in the season, but maybe he found something there at the end of last year and can get us a top 20 here at this tournament. So it's always an interesting exercise here at the beginning of the year, right? Like we're putting a lot of faith in what our eyes saw at the end of last year. We're putting a lot of faith in the numbers of what they tell us, but hey, who knows, right? There's new clubs being tested out. There's new putters being tested out.
New caddies, new swing coaches, the whole deal.
All that that's happening right now. So we're, I can say this, and I don't know about you guys, but like as far as monetary outlay for me, this will be, you know, again, I'm, I ease in, I ramp into the season, right? So like, this is probably, you know, a third of what I will be putting in 2 months from now. So if that tells anybody else out there, you know, maybe how you want to treat your bankroll as we get going here, like, you know, like Wes mentioned, there's new caddies with these guys. All the new drivers just hit, like they're all trying the new drivers and trying the new irons and stuff and all that. And so, I know Xander was playing the new Callaway ball. They came out with all new balls and stuff and everything. So like, there's just all that that's being tested here in these early tournaments, and they'll either like them and keep them, or they'll go back to the stuff they were using because they hate them. And there's all that. So we deal with a bunch of external factors too.
Yeah. Just absolutely. And then a couple quick comments on a couple of the bets you guys had is, Connors and Glover were two guys that I was considering heavily, and it just ended up not making the cut. So it sounds like Corey Connors would be the closest we have to a pod play this week. But nothing all three of us had. Nothing all three of us had. So we'll see if we round into form too here over the next couple of months.
Yeah, take that, trolls. take that, trolls, who say we all just play the same plays every week. So yeah, whatever. No, we're not this week. So we'll see what we can get done. But guys, awesome to be back in the saddle here. Looking forward to a great golf season, and looking forward to maybe going to Augusta. By the way, I think I'm going to Augusta.
Oh,
just to let y'all know. Yeah, I know. I just let y'all know. I think I'm making that trip over there this year.
I've heard that's an easy ticket to get on short notice.
Yeah, so. I'm. I fortunately have a guy.
He's got a guy.
So I think I'm going to make that trip this year. That's going to be fun, and can't wait to get this thing rocking and rolling here. So as always, Wes's article up on VSiN.com. Be sure and take that in. You can get all the stuff we said here in a much better and more condensed fashion there for you to go ahead and you know, soak up. And our picks page, if you didn't get all of these picks, if you weren't writing things down, VSiN.com/picks, and we'll be sure and get those in over there on the website as well. For Wes, for Kelly, I'm Matt. Good luck on all your Sony bets.